Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. Hello, Josephine Pembroke here from Radio Gorgeous, and it's Gorgeous Gossip Time. I'm here with Donna Freed.
Hello.
So, this week we've got a special guest, Emma Clark Lamb, who is a journalist, now turned author. We'll be talking to her later, but what's going on today? Who's Author of the Week?
Author of the Week is Naomi Wolf, who is, yes, with her revised edition of Vagina, A New Biography is coming out.
I mean, it's very brave of you to talk about that and talk about it in the first person, and I hope more and more women will. 30% of women have been molested or raped by a trusted male relative by the time they're 18. So a third of women are walking around with this very direct trauma. I think women's lives are really interesting, all of us, you know, but we're not given cultural support. And, well, with women, women are given this false offer. You can either be an intellectual or you can be a sex pot. Feminism is the supporting of you to make your own choices.
A Vagina, A New Biography is coming out in December 12th.
So you managed to speak to her?
She was here talking at the South Bank Center a couple of weekends ago, and I managed to get some time with her. She was extremely generous with her time, and the book was fascinating. You can hear, I was incredibly moved by it. Everyone is getting vagina for Christmas.
Well, even the poor men.
Yes, well, happy women make happy men. Uh-huh. Everyone should be happier. Everyone will be more satisfied and happier. Okay. Talk to the yoni, not talk to the hand.
Okay, brilliant. Gosh.
Is it warm in here?
Yes,
it is.
Yes, I'm very hot. Okay, and then what are you going to wear at Christmas? It's always a question. You want a dress which will take you from Christmas Day to Boxing Day to New Year's Eve, but we want a dress that might be not too short, might be made out of gorgeous fabric, might be made by two women that used to work at Topshop who've now set up their own business in Brighton, and it's Ali and B. And they're offering 20% off to all Radio Gorgeous listeners. Isn't that exciting?
Fantastic.
Now, today, Gorgeous Gossip. It's known that now it's totally socially acceptable for women to work, e.g. they've got maternity leave, nurseries, and the stay-at-home dads, which is fantastic. But what was it like for women in the 70s, you know, the first women to kind of generation of kind of feminists that went out to work? Emma Clark Lamb knows about this, as her granny worked in TV in the 1970s in the UK. And she wants to tell us about her experience, your granny's experience. But hello, Emma, how are you?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you.
So you're going to tell us a bit about you before we start?
About me, okay.
Yeah.
I am a freelance journalist, formerly working for BBC News Online. And then in 2004, I left the BBC to write fiction full-time and to freelance. And I have recently published my first novel, which is called A Sister for Margot, which is a bit of a family saga set in the 40s, but also set in the 1980s and the 1990s, and based somewhat on my grandmother's experiences.
So tell us about your granny, because she sounds like a personality and a half.
Yes, she certainly was, definitely. She started working as an actress in the Second World War.
In films?
She did do a film, actually, mainly theatre, but she did do a film called A Yank in the West Country.
Yes.
And she played the Yank, actually, oddly enough. Yeah. But she was mainly in theatre, and then she was in...
Now, was that quite shocking for the family?
Well, I think it probably was. She came from, you know, a good middle-class family. You know, her father printed a newspaper and had a chauffeur. I think they wanted her to go to university to read English, and she didn't want to do that. She wanted to go to drama school. So she was pretty strong-minded right from the get-go, I think.
Yeah.
They did want her to go to school.
Yeah, they did. So they were obviously progressive in that sense, which is, you know, probably how they lived with the fact that she did become an actress without disowning her or something, I don't know. So she trained at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. Then she became an actress. Then she was originally in musical theatre. Then she went into repertory theatre. After the war, she got married and somehow she must have talked my grandfather into letting her go back to work, because then they were in Wales at the time. She worked for the precursor to BBC Welsh Radio. Then she became a continuity presenter in the Midlands for ATV, which was the franchise holder for ITV. And then her most famous show that people of a certain generation remember is Tinker and Tucker, which was about two koala bears, a children's television show, which oddly enough people will still talk about today.
When was that then? Late 50s or something?
No, that was 1963 until 1970 it ran.
Wow.
And the fan club apparently was so popular, I think at its peak it had 750 million members.
What?
They had to close it down.
What? So what was she? Producer, presenter? What did she do?
She wrote the script. She was a producer and she was the presenter. So
fantastic.
she was Auntie Jean. And they had like Cliff Richard on it. And, you know, lots of the stars of the day would come onto it. Yeah.
So tell us about... So why do you want to talk about women, you know, working at that time? You know, what's the insights you've got?
Yes.
So Kizzy saying hello.
Joining
as
in. Well, the 1970s, I think, is a key decade for women in terms of acquiring equality, in terms of social attitudes. I think it was a transformative period. I sort of see it as a bridge between the sort of post-war, old world 1950s, 1960s attitudes and the more sort of modern, equitable society that we know today.
Mrs. Miniver to Modern Millie.
Well, exactly, yeah. And there were key pieces of legislation as well, right?
Exactly.
Bang in the middle of the 70s, you've got the Equal Pay Act, the Sexual Discrimination Act. So enshrining in law what was really quite radical at the time, and, you know, providing a benchmark, really, for women workers. You know, and you look back to that period and there's a lot of sort of what I call trailblazers. People like my grandmother, who was actually, she was no longer presenting at that point. She was probably too old to be on the front of the television. She was actually head of audience relations at that point for Central Television. But people like, well, Margaret Thatcher is an obvious example. There's a scientist called Dorothy Hodgkin, who won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry. There was also... Stella Remington, Dame Stella Remington, yeah. You know, that was her big formative career period. And then she became obviously head of the MI5. So there were a lot of important women who were sort of, you know, in the midst of their careers or getting their careers started at that point.
And how do you think women coped with kind of their private lives? Like now people have got so much support out there.
I think it was incredibly difficult for women in the 70s because there just wasn't the childcare there is now. Mm. And actually, I named all those women, but there were also a lot of nameless women who didn't have children, who had to choose a career and therefore couldn't really have a children or a family if that was what they really wanted to do.
Yeah, think of all the teachers at school and things
like
that. Yeah.
And I think women of our generation probably owe a lot to those women who were sort of treated as honorary men in effect.
Yeah.
You know, and they sort of paved the way for us, making it more acceptable for women to be in these jobs.
So tell us about your granny. What was different and interesting about her then?
What was different and interesting? She was just a fascinating character. She had great charm. So I think that probably helped. She could talk herself into anything. Great sense of humor. Obviously very attractive. I think that probably helped. Mm-hmm. I also think for women to succeed in that period, we talked about her parents and her husband. I think you needed the support. You needed, the parental support so that you knew you could do something like that.
Yeah. And your mind at first.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Childcare.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. What yes. So she was bringing up your mum.
And my uncle.
Yeah, so what did they do? What did she do for childcare?
She had a housekeeper.
Right.
So,
who did everything?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And during the holidays, both children would go to the grandparents.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah. So did they go to day school or boarding school?
My mother went to day school and my uncle went to boarding school.
Do they feel, you know, that they missed out compared to other, and did they kind of yearn for a stay-at-home mum?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think probably my mother did sometimes feel that she would have liked someone who was at home a bit more. And I know, you know, I know that she felt the difference that, that her mother was a working mother and most of her friends had stay-at-home mothers.
Then about probably 80% of women, of middle-class women.
Yeah, exactly, exactly, who didn't have to work. Yeah. In fact, I was at, my grandmother sadly passed away a couple of years ago, and at the funeral, one of my mother's friends came up to me and she said, "Do you know, my favourite memory of your Nana was school sports day, because she would turn up, you know, she wouldn't be wearing furs because it was the summer, but she'd be wearing, you know, full makeup, totally glamorous, you know, with her bags and her clothes, and she'd swan in for, you know, a segment of sports day." And, you know, and I said this to my mum, what a lovely memory. She said, "Oh God, I just died." She said, "It was so embarrassing. I just wanted her to be like all the other mums who didn't wear makeup, you know, and didn't sort of have this glamour about them."
So I'm interested to know what reaction it had on your mum. Did your mum have a career?
She did. She started in television in the 70s, well, late 60s, 70s. And she was a production assistant. And she came in as a secretary and then worked her way up to, actually, she should answer the mail, I think, was her first job.
Yeah.
And then she became production assistant, and it was her ambition to become a director. And I was talking about it, actually, because I said, what was it like working there in the 70s? And she said, actually,
Where was she working?
Central TV in the Midlands, same as my Nana.
Yeah.
And she said that the attitudes actually were very refreshing, and it was perfectly accepted that a woman could go on and become a director. There was no sort of, you know, obvious
glass
sexism.
Yeah.
So I think probably the broadcasting industry was perhaps a little way ahead of other industries.
So what did your mum give up work when she had you?
Well, no, my father then got a job abroad in the Middle East.
Yes.
So she was forced then to give up her job. She worked for about 10 years, I think.
Wow.
And then she went to the Middle East, and then she had me. So, yes. Yeah, you know, I wonder what, if that hadn't happened, I wonder what might have become of her career.
But you went to Oxford, so she obviously had ambitions for you, didn't she?
Yes, she did. Yeah. Yes, certainly. And we were both my brother and I were sent to boarding school because they were very emphatic about us having an education,
and
a proper education.
They also give money towards if you work in those industries, don't they? Don't they help towards
My father's job. Yes, yeah, yes.
Because they want you to be happy at home. And,
and also they were moving every 2 to 3 years, so you can't really drag a child. You know, it was hard. Our education was getting quite disrupted. So
did you see your granny more because of that?
I did, actually. Yes, yeah. Yes. I used to go and stay with her in half terms until she then retired to Ibiza, and then I didn't so much.
Now you haven't.
Then I spent the summer there.
Ibiza is a big place for you. Can you tell us why? And with granny moving there. But...
Yes. Nana moved there. So she had a second home there for about 20 years before she then retired there. So we always used to go there for the summer.
And you were there when it really was hippie and cool.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, I was there when it was uncool too. When it was, you know, people would go, "Ooh, you're not going to Ibiza." You know, it was a sort of package holiday place for a long time. People couldn't understand why you'd want to go, you know, why a nice middle-class family would want to go to Ibiza, and then it became cool. It was kind of hippie-ish.
Yeah.
Then it was package holiday destination. Yeah. Then it
Because I know the
cool.
hippie-ish people that went in the kind of 60s, early 70s.
And there still is a big hippie kind of community there, definitely.
So do you feel very at home in Ibiza?
I do, although it's changed a lot in the last few years. It's become a lot more moneyed than it used to, which makes me sad because it's sort of a barrier to entry in some ways.
Yeah, the innocence gone.
Yeah.
And what about, so were you a raver?
I did a bit of clubbing. Yeah. I don't know if I was a raver. Sort of techno clubbing era.
Were you like those foam, covered in foam and those sort of
things? Yes, I did a couple of those. Not many, but
Now, did you take ecstasy? Don't worry, your children aren't listening.
No, I didn't, actually. I'm too, you know,
but you got
scared
in the mood
to do anything that.
You just got drunk. And
yes, exactly. Yes, yes.
Brilliant, brilliant. Now, let's talk about your book, because it is based on your grandmother. Can you tell us the name of it again and the kind of the story?
Sure. It's A Sister for Margot, and it's set in three parts. So it begins in the 80s, then it starts with a prologue in the 40s, then it's in the 80s and it flashes back to the 40s. The main sort of character in the 40s is this very charismatic actress called Maud, who works in theatre.
Sorry, it's thunder and lightning. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it's very dramatic. Drum roll outside. Yeah. And she has that most unfeminine characteristic, which is ambition. You know, she wants to go far. She hasn't got time to have an affair or, a love affair or whatever. Anyway, unfortunately, she does have a love affair, despite her best efforts not to. And then the worst happens, she gets pregnant. And, you know, she immediately knows that this spells the worst for her career, that, you know, having a child and being an actress is not going to go together. So that's sort of one central tenet of the book. And then the other bit is sort of Maud's relations, really, and them sort of trying to... You don't really know what happens to Maud. So I sort of cut it off at the point where things are getting a bit interesting. And so the rest of the book is sort of revisiting that. And it's also about this other character called Ruby, who is an orphan. And she's trying to come to terms with her place in the world, her niche, and is fascinated by this great aunt Maud and what happened to her and the skeletons in the cupboard.
And something unearthed at the end that you can't tell us, isn't there?
Oh, yes. No, I can't tell you that because we're going to buy the book.
Now, how do you buy the book?
You can buy it on Amazon. It's an ebook. So it's on Amazon and it's $1.99
That's a bargain.
Absolutely. It was $2.99 and it's $1.99 at the moment.
So. Oh, the special offer, everybody. Yeah. Another special offer on Radio Gorgeous. It's been so lovely to talk to you today. And thank you so much for taking part in Gorgeous Gossip. And I wish you all the luck in the world with your writing.
Lovely. Thank you for having me.
When my mother went to work, she locked us in the basement.
That was our nanny,
the basement.
So that's why you're so balanced now, isn't it?
Yes,
locked away.
And above ground. Don't go downstairs.
In fact, in American films, they use the basements a lot, don't they?
Because we have them. Yeah, exactly. We don't have them here.
Yeah. In Britain, it's quite unusual to have a basement.
But it's all the rage in London now.
Yeah.
It's like, why? Yes. Why do you want a cellar?
Extra room, darling. You don't have to move.
Yeah, we don't have to move. We'll just put the kids in the basement.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it. That makes perfect sense now.
Exactly. Now you know in your new home, Donna, you can build a basement. Your darling son can be locked away. Thank you so much for listening to Gorgeous Gossip. This is a Radio Gorgeous production for Radio Gorgeous 2013. Goodbye. RadioGorgeous.com